You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese Podcast. I have Tri Va here with me today, and we are at a park, a lovely, beautiful LA day. Tri, thanks for driving all this way to join us.
Yeah, of course. I came a little late because I was just like, a Davian opened up next to my house and I got a marble drip this morning, and that was marble dripping through me. Like, I needed to make a stop to let out the Kraken because...
All right, you have nothing to be worried about.
I just got here. We just started. I know we're starting off strong.
She wanted to be doing jumping jacks to like work off the nerves. I think you're just fine.
Yeah, yeah. I was just nervous because I mean I follow his work. He's doing such great things. So I was just nervous coming on today. But I mean, I think it's gonna be fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the kind words. Have you always been this funny?
No, honestly, I feel like most of the time I'm not funny.
Interesting.
I think really? It comes out like a defense mechanism a little bit when I'm nervous.
Yeah. Ah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. When you started making content, how did you know if it would work? This funny business, how do you know that this was going to be something that, you know, has legs?
I honestly didn't. It kind of just happened. So I started my TikTok during COVID, and I think we were all going through it during COVID, yeah. You know? And I told myself prior to COVID, I would never download TikTok because everyone's saying they're addicted to it. And, you know, I just didn't want to fall in that trap. But during COVID, we weren't doing anything. So I'm like, let me download TikTok. Let me try this out. And I started posting videos on TikTok that I've been posting on my Snapchat, actually, like just for my close friends. But I started putting it out there. It started getting traction. And I realized there's like a huge Vietnamese community online. And I started connecting with everyone. And it just kept going from there. But I didn't know. It wasn't something I was looking for.
So... this is a very recent thing, but did you have like acting or did you have any singing or showbiz experience prior going into that TikTok venture?
Yeah. So in high school, I was a huge theater kid. If you couldn't tell, I did plays and I did musicals. And growing up, there was a part of me that always thought I wanted to be an actor. Like I wanted to make people laugh. I want to be an entertainer. So there was always that part of me. And leaving high school, actually, my dreams were I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to be on Broadway. But of course, being in a Vietnamese immigrant family, I feel like being in the entertainment business is not something that's encouraged. So I was kind of talked out of that a little bit. I went to college and I did fall in love with business and I went to get my master's. I worked in Silicon Valley for a couple years and then COVID hit. And I don't know, something just didn't feel aligned anymore. I was like, I mean, I love this, but I feel like there's another part of me that I want to explore and I want to do that now. So I spent a couple years in corporate. Then I decided I think it's time to go and explore other things, especially when my TikTok started getting some traction. And I realized there is a community that wants entertainment, especially picking fun at their own Vietnamese culture, which, I mean, I've lived and experienced. So I kind of just took it from there and I moved down to LA. I started taking gigs. I started leaning into the content creation a little bit more. And now I'm just doing everything creative and I feel like I'm living my best life.
Are you completely off the corporate grid?
Not completely. I do come into the office like once a week. I do have an office job that allows me to come in once a week and I still get to do HR, which I actually do really love. So I appreciate that I have jobs that are kind of flexible and allows me to be creative on the side.
That's the way to go, I think.
Yeah.
Is to have like a remote job that you love and that you can continue to do the real work.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Jose, California. Actually, I was born in Lawrenceville, Georgia, but I don't talk about that too much because I don't have any recollection of Georgia, but spent most of my life in San Jose.
How did your parents end up in Georgia?
So my biological dad was in Georgia, so I was born over there, and my parents got divorced, and my mom moved here to California where my grandparents were in San Jose.
Okay. Yeah. And then did you grow up around a lot of Vietnamese people?
So funny enough, up until like maybe middle school, high school, there weren't a lot of Vietnamese people in my life outside of my family, of course. Like I grew up in a dominantly Mexican community, like in elementary school. So in elementary school, I was like one of three Asian kids. So got a lot of bullying for that. Was called all the slurs under the sun, but I think it builds character, you know? I think that's where comedy comes from, sad enough. Like I think...
Darkness,
yeah.
Pain, trauma.
Comedy comes from trauma.
comes from trauma. If you were not traumatized as a kid,
exactly.
Your comedy sucks.
Then you're boring.
Yeah, you're
just
boring. Yeah. But your Vietnamese pronunciation and your understanding of idiomatic contextual movements within the words is like flawless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you get that from?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't think I'm as fluent in Vietnamese as people think I am. I think it comes off that way. But honestly, I like to say I'm half fluent in all the languages I know. Like, what did they say? They say bilingual, but like B-Y-E, because you're not actually bilingual.
No, it's crazy how precise you are with your language.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. I try. I mean, I'm still a learner. I mean, Vietnamese is hard. And especially since I moved away from my family, I feel like I don't get to practice my Vietnamese as much. So I'm appreciative that I get to use Vietnamese as my content to practice myself.
It's hard, but it's harder to do what you do, which is like bringing words together and then going in and out of it. And then like, it's like the rigidity of the framing of what you do is what's mind-blowing. When you sit and you analyze like what is being said in the flow, I have so much appreciation for the way your brain works in that context.
Yeah.
Like somebody can study it, like a neuroscientist can study how your brain is going back and forth. It's as if it's one language.
Yeah.
But you're born in Georgia. It's like mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was born here. I think my mom kind of talks that way. So it's a little instinctive to me. I don't know. I just like inhale in English and it exhales in Vietnamese sometimes.
That makes sense.
It flows. It comes out of me a little naturally, just like the marble drip this morning.
Are you less nervous right now?
Yeah.
Because I think that marble drip comment is very visual, very graphic.
Yeah. Cut to commercial, actually. No, let's cut this out. No, I'm kidding. You can keep it.
And so, okay. So now are you doing acting classes or any of that stuff?
No, I'm not. I want to. We were just talking about this right before. Yeah. But I want to start doing more classes just to hone my acting skills. And it's been so long since I've done it.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So you brought up UCB, which is United Citizens Brigade, right? Mm-hmm. So UCB is it's a place in LA, sort of like the place where you kind of work out improv. And you said to me, well, we shared that we both, because we talked to Will Pepper and Fred Lay, I talked to all these guys at one point about me doing stand-up comedy, right? And I think you'd make an amazing stand-up comic.
I think it'd be fun. I don't know if I'd be good at it because I feel like I tense up sometimes, but I think it'd be a lot of fun. And even if I don't end up being a stand-up comedian, I think it's skills that I can use in content creation, just acting in general.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I brought up this example of like, you know, athletes, if they're a basketball player, football player, they cross train in other sports.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, you know, running or whatever, and it's conditioning us to kind of like be quicker on our feet when we're making content.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you'll eventually probably get MC gigs or, you know, hosting or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think when you do, and I say this because I know a lot of content creators listen and, you know, sometimes the experience of talking to people like you will inspire young people to kind of understand like, okay, this is us in April 2026, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in 4 years from now, after UCB, we do that 1 6-week thing.
Yeah.
People are like, oh shit. Like they actually talked about it today.
Yeah. And we're on tour together, going worldwide.
I'll be in my, we'll shoot for the stars, but I'll be like with the walking cane at that point. Cause it takes 10 years. We're talking about me and the guys were talking at dinner last night. We're talking about how long it actually takes to like lock in. 3 years minimum, 5 years on average, 10 years if you're not that great.
To be a stand-up comedian or
yeah,
just...
to tour and make that money.
Yeah, I
but
can
I
see
think
that.
I don't want to do it to be a stand-up comedian. I want to do it because I want to condition,
yeah,
you know, so I can get better. Like if I'm on stage talking as a host.
Yeah.
Just having that kind of that ability to kind of do it.
Yeah, let's do it. There are classes.
Here we go.
We're
going to do it.
Let's do it.
You guys saw it here. We're going to do it. We're going to sign up for this. We have to do it. We have to do it because we're not editing this. We're not editing this.
Oh, man.
What? You know, you talked about a little bit about this bullying and this trauma. do you think that the kids today, you know, my kids go to school here in South Pasadena. And I ask them all the time, is there any bullying? Do you guys bully? Like, what's the deal? They're like, no, there's no bullying at all. I don't know if that's a great thing.
You're like, bring back bullying. Is that what you're saying? We need more comedians in the future. Bring back bullying.
You know, because I think about how hard I had it as a Vietnamese American kid. And I'm like, oh, well, it has informed all of the identity things that I talk about today. And I'm like, maybe I'd be a corporate person working 9 to 5 and there would be no interesting thing to really address in society today. And I ask this question on a very simple basis all the time. You probably can't answer, would it be better for your life if you didn't have trauma?
I can't because I feel like most of my artistic content comes from trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up sometimes is because I think about how we are product of war. You know, we're the product of like the Vietnam War. But when I think about somebody like you, I'm like, you could see it in the way your mother talks, right? That there's trauma in her probably wartime experience as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that yelling, you could hear it coming through you.
Yeah. Like people ask me all the time, why are you always yelling? And I was like, I don't know. That's just the only way I've heard Vietnamese. I didn't know there was another volume for Vietnamese.
Yeah, it's always, you could feel it. It's all, but like meeting you in person so many times, it's like, you're such a chill person.
Really? I don't know.
Really? No, you're totally chill.
Okay, I'm glad.
Every time I've seen you, it's like, you're totally chill. You're like, not, there's not this same on-air personality that you have. This flow state that I witness and I talk about that you show up. Do you realize like you're in flow state when you're doing it? You know what that is? You know what flow state is?
Yeah, like when I'm just locked in, I'm in the zone. I feel
you're in the zone.
Best.
Yeah. You don't. You like. There's no. You can't track time. Hours have gone by. You're just in flow state. It was like it's a term coined by this like writer Chemerinsky, and he wrote a book called Flow State. And then you could see it in you when you're
really?
Like, delivering. Yeah,
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah,
but that's cool that it's showing up that way.
So does it mean that you have that you record many times on a clip? Like, what's the process? Because it can't be where you like hit record and you do the shot. You do the shtick in one shot. I'm like having trouble like with all I find it impossible for you to like turn and hit record and then go for it. And then you're just like in flow state right away. Like what's the process?
There is a flow. So I keep a list of things on my phone that just triggers me throughout the day. Like, oh, this is really annoying. Like, I feel like this is a good basis for content, a good foundation for it. And then if I'm frustrated enough, I will rant about it on the spot. And I just hit record. I start doing it.
Oh, wow.
It's not a one take thing though. I rant about it a little bit. And then as I'm ranting, like a joke comes up and I said, let's do that again and add that joke. And I do it again. I add another joke and then another joke comes up and it just keeps going and going until I make myself giggle. And I'm like, that's good. I'm gonna post that. So my process is a little chaotic. I don't really have it's different every time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what's another way?
Sometimes I do the skits. This is how my content first started. I was like picking fun of my mom a lot. So whenever she says something that triggers me, I'm like, I'm so frustrated right now. I'm going to make a skit about this. So I say exactly what she said to me, but I put a comedic twist on it. I exaggerate it a little bit more just for comedic intentions. And yeah, that one I do have to plan out a little bit more. I'm like writing down things she says, yeah. And then I form a bit of a script. But same process, like whenever I'm filming, I think of a joke and then I do it again and I just add it in.
Wow, that's crazy. It's a cool process.
Yeah, it's a little chaotic, but it works.
Yeah. How have you been received in Vietnam?
Honestly, I don't know. I think I'm grateful enough that I don't receive hate comments or anything. Like, it's generally been positive. I don't know what the consensus is in Vietnam specifically, but for the most part, feedback's been positive. So I like to think people are enjoying it everywhere.
I can imagine, because there's a lot of young people in Vietnam that speak perfect English.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Yeah. Have you been to Vietnam?
Like once when I was really young.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. I do want to go back though. I want to eat Vietnamese street food so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have marble drip.
Yeah. But over there.
And experience the squat toilets.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I remember that.
How old were you when you went to Vietnam?
I want to say like 10 or something. Yeah. And I visited Hue, which is where my grandpa grew up. And we didn't live in a very great area. So there were, you know, we were pooping in the holes on the ground. Yeah.
At 10.
Yeah. But I mean, you're very flexible at 10. It was no problem.
I couldn't do it at 10.
You couldn't?
No.
The Asian squat?
No, I can't even do it now. But I'm older, so I can't. But even at 10, there's no way.
Really?
Like, my brain wouldn't let me do it. Like, I'd hold it in for weeks if I, yeah.
What?
I could not do it. I can't even use a public bathroom.
Why not? Do you get poop shy?
It's just so gross to me.
That's fair. So it's poop shyness. It's like a mental thing. It's not like, is it a physical thing for you?
All right, look, I've never said this on air, but since I'm like sitting with the comedian, I guess I'm going to have to go there.
Okay. Yeah, we have to go to the poop stories.
I'm going to go there, okay?
Okay.
I think...
That's too much. How dare
I think
you?
America has it wrong. Think about this. If you put poop on your hand and you take toilet paper and you wipe it down 3 or 4 times, is it really clean? You gotta wash it off with water. Tree, think about this. This bidet thing.
You're a bidet guy.
I have to do bidet or shower.
So you right have after. To, okay. I okay. see that. Okay,
think
but.
Think about it.
I don't want to get too graphic. You can cut this out if it's too much. But I feel like.
Yeah, we ain't cutting this out. We don't get nothing out.
When you poop, there's like a natural lubrication that allows the wipe to be cleaner. It's not like.
Wait, what's the natural lubrication?
I don't know. Someone
we're gonna spend the next half an hour talking about poop.
Okay, I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about, but it feels like there's a lubrication because there has to be for it to come out of you. It's not like poop on your hand. Your hand's ashy. You know, so there would be streaks if you just wiped it off your hand, but I feel like there's some moisture right after you poop. Let's cut to commercial. That was too much.
No, it's not too much. Actually, we're going to go deeper.
No pun intended.
We got to go. No pun intended for sure, but think about this. Okay. All right. I was going to bring up the whole coffee and colonoscopy and cancer all in one. Like,
okay.
We're doing it.
Okay.
It's weird that the universe has brought us here today, actually.
To talk about poop?
My theory on cancer, colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You do coffee, right? Mm-hmm. You do regular coffee where it's like acidity going into your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you do espresso, you do all this hot drip, café soda, and all this stuff. It's tearing up the lining inside of your stomach and your gut. So by the time you poop, it's inflaming your colon or your... And doctors, if you're listening to this, please help me out here because I'm like some ignorant guy talking about this.
Tune in. We're just a bunch of comedians. We don't know what we're talking about.
Exactly. That's about to sign up to UCB. Anyway, I think that when you ingest all this acidity and you inflame yourself and everything gets inflamed and then you use toilet paper to wipe, if you're doing this for 20, 30 years and it's causing all kinds of like lining damage to your like open extremities...
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have some molecular cell changes down there that it's going to create cancer down there. That is my theory.
I can see that. So are you anti-toilet paper? Is that what I'm 1,000%. Getting?
1,000%. I'm anti toilet paper and I'm anti coffee going through espresso drips and machines.
Okay.
Because the two of those things in my brain combine. I'll talk about this. Like, hemorrhoids was a problem for me when I was on toilet paper and acidic espresso.
Mm-hmm.
Once all that went away, perfect poop. Perfect poop. No issues. No issues at all. No pain. So I can't imagine.
No pain, no gain. Yeah.
Yeah, you should try it. You should try. Because I think
I don't know if I'm ready to go no toilet paper yet. Maybe one day. Yeah. I like my Charmin Ultra Soft. I gotta say.
Well, I'm not like fighting for this. Like, this is not a hot take for me or anything, but I'm just saying this is just some logical thing that I've thought about throughout the years.
Yeah.
Water is the answer to all of it. And I think Europe, Asia, all like bidet countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot more Americans are now adapting to this idea of like water.
Yeah.
When everybody was like short on toilet paper during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I was like, ah.
You were right all along. Speaking of bidets, have you thought about how gay in Vietnamese is bidet?
All the time.
Yeah. Is that a coincidence? What's the history there?
No. Okay, so yeah, thank you for asking, because I'm going to deliver this.
Okay, I'm about to get educated.
Okay, so bidet is different from bidet.
Right.
So the spelling's actually different.
Uh-huh.
Bidet is the water coming out of a toilet, right?
Yeah.
But bidet comes from the root word pedophile. Pedophile.
Oh, so that makes sense.
So it's a very darker
direction. It's a slur.
Yeah, it's a slur. Bidet is definitely a slur. You should never be using bidet.
Yeah.
You should not allow people to use bidet.
Hmm.
This is what I've like been told by the gay community many, many years ago.
Yeah.
It is a, you know, like you're calling somebody basically a pedophile.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that. I think because that term was used so loosely in my family, but my family's also, you know, we're having conversations about it. Like, it was difficult for me when I came out to my family, yeah, like a couple years ago. So I can see how maybe some of these slurs were kind of just normalized in my family. So I did not know bidet was a slur.
Yeah.
I also learned recently that chinky is a slur.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Like,
why would chinky not be a slur?
I thought it was just a descriptive word. Like,
slana is a descriptive word too.
Slanted?
Slant eye? Like, you? Did you ever get called that? Like,
oh, yeah. Whoa. Yeah, all the time.
But that's a slur, right?
I mean, I was hurt by it because it was coming from someone not in my community. Right. And it was to make fun of me.
Just punching down, right?
Yeah, so I thought chinky was just, like, I call myself chinky sometimes. I didn't know it was a slur until I was taking a photo with one of my white friends. And I said, I was smizing in it. So, you know, when you like smile, but close your eyes a little. And I was like, I look kind of chinky in this. And she said, no, Teresa, don't say that about yourself. Like, what? And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, it's a descriptive word. I do look chinky in this.
But we can use that word on ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think it's, when we use it, it's a slur for ourselves.
Right. But I guess other people.
Other people. Yeah. It's definitely a slur.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just learning all these terms are slurs. I guess I just grew up hearing it.
I wonder. Look, I think words matter, but yeah, sometimes, you know, friends that love us and they bust out with these slurs. I think, and if they don't know it, is it okay for them to continue using it, or do we call them out?
I think you should definitely call them out if you know. I mean, none of my friends are saying chinky around me, but I was just thinking
it was okay.
Yeah
chinky is definitely a slur, and bidet is definitely a slur. Now, what's the options to bidet? How do you say?
I don't know, but do you feel like the term bidet has been reclaimed by the gay community? Not
in
that it's
a good way or a bad way.
In a good way.
No I don't think it's ever,
it's not okay.
It's one of those things that they don't know, they don't know. But mm-hmm. if you do know the history of it, but then this is what I've heard. I probably need to call up John Pham over at Columbia. He's a linguistics professor, and he's a young professor that specializes in these words. And he happens to be gay. So I should probably ask John if he knows this. But what I've heard throughout the years is bidet is the root word for pedophile, or it comes from that word.
Well, knowing that, I can definitely see how that's a slur and disrespectful.
But then bidet means child. File, file means love of. So pedophile means the love of a child. Like Philadelphia means brother, and file means the love, the brotherly love. So pedophile means the love of a child. So if you say bidet, it doesn't mean child, but it means all of those guys who love little boys. You know what I mean? So it was adapted maybe, I think, during the French times. I don't know. I don't know what the real root cause, root word, the etymology behind it is, but that's what I've been told throughout the years. So I don't know. And I think this is worth actually looking into.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I know the term for lesbian in Vietnamese is it omoy, I think?
Omoy.
Yeah.
Your pronunciation is like perfect.
Really?
Yeah.
I try. Omoy.
Omoy, yeah.
Is that a slur?
I don't know. And we'll only know if we can figure out where it comes from.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we need to look into this.
Omoy.
Yeah, that'll be my homework after this. I want to look into this. I do know, though, like, I've been gay my whole life. I've, like, known since I was little. And I did feel something when I heard my family refer to a gay person and they would say, like, they be, bede, or be, omoy. Like, it was something that happened to them. And it kind of implicated that it was a choice. And I do remember feeling like, I don't know why, but that doesn't sit right with me. Like, you're saying it something be to something, like it's a disease you caught, you know?
No, you're 1,000% on the mark.
Yeah.
You're 1,000% right. And I have to correct my mom all the time and older people around me. Be means bad happening to you.
Yeah.
Duk means good happening to you.
Yeah.
So when you say, you never hear that.
No,
right?
She gets the privilege,
gets the
of, being
privilege of being gay.
Yeah.
You'll never hear that in the Vietnamese lexicon.
Yeah.
But you hear bay, bay day.
Bay day. Just like bay
so
bun.
Right.
It's like a bad
thing. It's bay bun.
Yeah.
It's no different.
Yeah.
So this idea, I mean, you're, say no more. I mean, you got it right.
Yeah.
So it's up to us to like adjust the language.
Mm-hmm.
That these people have. And I always say, and I always correct older people. I'm like, whoa, let's back up here.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're like very progressive, they're like, oh, bác xin lỗi con. You know, I don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
I'm like, but then watch your words, right? Check yourself, right? But if they're, you know, super religious and they're anti-gay, then I'm like, let's break this down. And then we get into this debate. I'm like, you should not be using that word that way. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could tell my family that sometimes. I feel like your Vietnamese it goes a lot deeper than mine. Like I would say I'm fluent in most casual Vietnamese conversations, but when it comes to like politics, when it comes to explaining how I'm offended, I have a hard time with that.
But you have a good sense of it. And that's what I think that's what matters most is that you have a sense of like you couldn't even really understand why it was like you're feeling it, but you just explained it to me why you were feeling like this is wrong.
Yeah.
And then you get the breakdown, the literal word breakdown. And I think that our job with being born to our families in America, we're rebels.
Mm-hmm.
We Americans are rebels. Vietnamese Americans have this rebellion kind of like program into our DNA. It's our job to like inform.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what what people think. You brought us here and you didn't know that you were going to have rebels in your family, but this is the result of being Americans. This is the beauty of being an American is having this rebellious streak to really call out the things that are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you got it.
Yeah. It gets kind of hard with your immigrant family sometimes because you want to honor their traditional values. I mean, I think they had to hold it so close coming to America because that's all they had. So when I challenge their ideas on the gay community, when it comes to the entertainment industry too, I have to push back a lot because it's what I'm doing now. And sometimes I feel like I don't really have their respect. And I try to explain to them like, you know, you brought me here for opportunities and this is the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I have the luxury of picking what I want to do and really looking deep and seeing what makes me happy, which I feel like they didn't have the opportunity to do. And I try to tell them that sometimes, but it's hard because I'm on the side of, I want to respect you. I want to honor what you did to bring me here. But at the same time, I'm my own person.
Yeah. You know? And you have to ask them, like, why are they getting involved? First of all, because we all go through this as artists. I think our parents are. But what are they fearing? Like, if you're fine financially, like, what is it? Like, what are they really afraid of?
I think it's the instability. And when you think about Vietnamese artists, like in Vietnam, I think they notoriously struggled. You know, I don't know if you've heard the term like
Sinh ca vô loại.
I haven't heard of that, okay. Actually, but it probably means the same thing, like đời của, like ca sĩ is always coal. Like that, I always hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just any artist in general. So I think they have that idea that if you're an artist, you're kind of bound to
right.
be struggling.
And I think in Vietnam, that's fair.
Yeah, even here. I mean,
But I think here, there are artists that get it and lock in on the business side. Because once you can figure out the business side of the model, then you can actually make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You just have to figure out what the steps are. And I talk a lot about these steps with like Will Pepper, right? The last time he was on, we talk about like, how long it takes, how much money you should expect. Well, we didn't talk about like those kind of breakdowns, but there are actual steps.
Mm-hmm.
There's actual layers to all of the things. Like mm-hmm. as a film director and actor, some people make it, some people don't. Mm-hmm. And you gotta kind of know, like if you have been doing this for a few years and you're not making traction and you look around and like everybody's hitting their milestones but you, then you need to drop out, right? I'm not fighting that.
Yeah.
But I think in Vietnam back in the day, they didn't have structure and there were no infrastructure in place to pay out. But
yeah.
Here in America, I think there's like, you see a whole class of Vietnamese artists in America, whether it's Instagram people or actual film directors or whatever, they're making money,
mm-hmm.
making a lot of money. But if they're making money, why can't we make money? The only difference is like, if you know better or you don't know better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this mic okay, by the way? I think it might have been covering it. Oh, it's fine.
I think you should be good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think talking about that, they always worry about like these things that are really not, they're not concrete fears. They're just like these abstract fears that they, you know, have history coming from the old country. But like, there are people that make so much money in the entertainment industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Granted, it is a small percentage. So I understand the fear that it's coming from. I think it's just that it's an unknown space for them, you know, and it is unstable sometimes. And they tell me all the time, like, oh, you're only doing this because you're young, but what happens when you're old? And I said, I think getting old would exist regardless of what industry I'm
in. Totally.
And they talk about how it's so unstable because I am a gig worker. Like I work from gig to gig. But when they look at my 9-to-5, it seemed more stable. Like I had a place to go to every day and they think that that's secure. But when it comes down to it, people in Silicon Valley get laid off all the time. It's not any more, maybe a little bit, but not much more secure than being an entertainment worker. I think it's just a volatile industry that we're in.
When I put a line in the pros and cons boxes and I list the pros and cons list, I put a line and I write the pros and the cons. I think about all the money that could buy me opportunities to travel and to eat at amazing restaurants. And then I write out on the pros for being a content creator, the list of pros for me far outweigh the list of cons. And when I think about me as a corporate or a business person back in the day, the list of pros are big, but the cons are even like
longer.
Yeah. And I think that not everybody has trauma. As artists, I think whatever that trauma is or the experience that we go through provides this sort of like this this material. And if it doesn't get out, you become very dead and unhappy. That's the problem. And so like not everybody are artists because they don't have these like weird backgrounds that they being gay or, and I'll use the word weird, you know, having identity, being weird to the normal person. Mm-hmm. We have weird baggage. And if it can't get out, we become stuck.
Yeah.
Like my brain is functioning constantly on so many different, you know, emotional issues and regulating sexuality, regulating identity and existential shit. And it just, it never calms down.
Mm-hmm.
So as a corporate person or as a business person, it's an unhappy existence.
Yeah. What were you doing before in corporate?
I had a factory. It wasn't a corporate job. I owned a factory with my mom and dad and my brother.
Oh, wow.
For 20 something years. It still exists in Vietnam. We still make, we still weave out of it. But I was so unhappy. And I was in Hollywood for, you know, the first 5 years after college, 9 to 5, work at the agencies or production companies for film. But I was so unhappy.
What about it? Was it the routine or?
No, it was like, I was looking at all these actors and writers and stuff and they were expressing.
Yeah.
And you would read it on the page and you're just like, I could be doing that. But I didn't, I just didn't know that it was open to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there were steps and layers to like to doing all these things.
Yeah. And look at you now.
I'm 50. I should have been doing this at 25, you know?
Well, you're here now.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm grateful for. I'm not complaining. But you're right. But you're young enough to still like cement your artistry. And then even as a much older person, you could still be doing the same things that you do.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. I love what I'm doing.
And I think as AI and I think as AI and all of these technologies take over the entertainment space, comedians who can show up in real time in real life is priceless.
Yeah.
Because AI cannot do what a comedian can do.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to ask like ChatGPT to tell you a joke?
No. Have
it's
you?
It's always so bad. It's like knock knock jokes.
Right.
It's like, yeah. So it gives me a little confidence that comedy is not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere. There's no way.
Yeah. And we've already seen AI taking over some space of the entertainment industry, but I think there's some parts that's so human about the entertainment industry that AI can never take over.
It won't, for comedians especially. I don't think so. I was into this one AI, I didn't know it was AI at the time, but this soul singer, it was a black voice that was singing like these really disturbing, it was like, he was like this reform player going to church. Kind of like
it was
songs.
An AI singer.
I didn't find out until much later.
Yeah,
but I was hooked on this song because all of the taboo of what black men go through as a player, and then as a reformed player going to church, uh-huh. reeking of booze and like womanizing, and it was amazing. But I started letting my friends listen to it, and I thought it was like entertaining to like have them comment on it, but they began to tell me, hey, there's something like off about this.
Mm-hmm.
All of it sounded the same. And I began to like really study it. And then, you know, at the beginning of the last year, it was like he had like 5 songs. Like whoever did it had only five songs. I was like, all right, this is cool. They're all like, they sound like great hits.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the year, there were like 50 tracks. I was like, you can't write that many.
That's true. Though.
Yeah. So I looked into it. It was like a programmer writing AI music.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it all sound the same. They all sound like chart-topping hits. You get bored of that. Yeah. You can't go to it and feel the soul and the imperfection of that. So I think as we become more entertained with like movies or whatever that are coming out of AI, I think there will be a limit to how we respond to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I hear a lot of people getting catfished by AI songs. They're like, listen to this song, it's so good. And then you look at the, you go to the Spotify profile, that too, it's just a little off. Like the photo looks a little too perfect.
Yep.
Her skin's a little too airbrushed. You're like, wait a minute.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And they can't really ever dig into this wealth of like information that you are dealing with your mom. Like, how are they ever going to get to that, right?
Yeah.
I just don't see it.
I joke around about how, you know, there's been these scam calls where, yeah. I don't know how they've been, like, imitating your parents' voice to call you and say, like, they're holding me hostage. You need to send me $100,000 right now. And I was like, there's no way they can get my mom's voice right. Because there's no way they can perfect a Vietnamese accent, but just enough to sound exactly like my mom and the way she does the Vietlish. I'm like, I really hope they can't imitate that. Because then if so, then I'm screwed.
I find it difficult. And even if they could replicate it, the actual words that they use will not have that, like, it'll ring hollow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So now we have to find more trauma that we we can ingest to create more. But do you ever worry about that? Do you ever worry that you run out of material to write about?
No, I mean, I take inspirations from everyday inconveniences. Like I go online and I rant about random stuff all the time. And I talk about my experiences interacting with other Vietnamese people. Like recently I did a rant, not really a rant, but just something I noticed when I was interacting with a Vietnamese baker. I was buying something at a bakery and I just noticed that we blend some words together. And like, you know, I just notice little things like that in our language that I comment on and people seem to be like, oh yeah, I never noticed that before. And we bond over that. So it's just everyday stuff. I don't think it always has to rely on trauma. It started off that way and it goes back to that a lot, but.
Have you ever expanded beyond the Vietnamese? Do you think that your material will lend itself beyond the Vietnamese borders of language?
You know, I get a lot of non-Vietnamese people saying, like, my mom acts the same way. And I think most of the time it's just immigrants in general. Like, their moms kind of inhabit the same overbearing, a little protective of their kids, telling them what not to do. So I think it's grown beyond the Vietnamese community a little bit. But I think at its core, it's mostly relatable to kids of immigrants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever look at your performance numbers and question yourself, because I go through this and I always think about this, like for people who do what we do, how do you get beyond the numbers? Some clips and episodes you put out rocks, you know, it kicks ass, and then some do below par. And I wonder how that affects your content creation.
It's hard as a performer, and especially when it's like it could be your main avenue of income.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to look at the numbers because you don't want it to affect your creativity and you don't want to perform based on the numbers. But when the numbers is kind of all you have to numerize your success, I guess. I try not to look at it too much because sometimes when I put stuff out there and I'm like, I feel like this is funny and it's not performing well, I don't want to impair myself from doing, like, being experimental or trying that same bit the next time, you know? So it's hard, but I try not to look at it. And I'm like, if it does well, then it does well. And if it doesn't, then oh well.
That is definitely one of the hardest things I think about putting out content.
Yeah.
You know, is that navel gazing and you're thinking about, God, this is, like, good to me.
Yeah. And as an entertainer, I feel like we have people pleasing tendencies because we are doing it for the people. So when the people's not enjoying it, I'm like, oh man, I suck. They don't like me. But at the same time, you need to like just keep true to what you think is comedy. Because I think when you get lost in what other people think is comedy, then it becomes something else. And then you're making stuff that you don't resonate with. And it's different.
Yeah. It rings hollow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait for you to go back to Vietnam one day and perform on stage as a stand-up comedian with an hour special.
Oh, man.
Because that's 100 million people in Vietnam, and you speak fluent Vietnamese.
That sounds intimidating, but it sounds really fun. I mean, I'm open to trying it. Yeah, maybe one day. Maybe 10 years from now, we'll refer back to this podcast.
10 years from now, we're going to refer back to this podcast and look back at the last 5 years of like where we are.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it takes that long for you to go from UCB and then picking up like a few years of, you know, doing stand-up. I mean, and the platform that you have will inform each other, right? Like the stand-up and then, you know who Stephen Ho is?
Yeah, I've been seeing his stuff around. I think Will just toured with him, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Correct me if I'm wrong. But I think...
Yes.
But yeah, I think I've seen his stuff around.
Yeah, he was like this ER nurse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For many years.
Might have been someone else, yes.
Yeah, and then he was doing Instagram like you.
Mm-hmm.
Doing all these bits, and then he just blew up. And then he just like really honed in. And he studied acting too.
Mm-hmm.
And honed in on stand-up. Million followers on Instagram. So once you like put it out there, you're just like, I'm going on tour, put tour dates out.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds fun.
It does.
I love being on stage. I remember I have such fond memories of doing theater because it's like you're up there. It's the adrenaline. You have one shot of doing this right. And you had months and months of rehearsal. And this is like your one moment and you get to do it and people love it. And it's such a thrilling feeling. I don't get that as much with film. But I love it in different ways because you get to perfect it. You get to retake it. You get to try different things. But something about being on stage and performing and receiving that comedy or that laughter on the spot.
There's a dynamic
that hits different. Yeah.
Let's talk about like this film and acting journey that you are embarking on. It's a relatively recent thing, or have you been doing it for the last 5 years since the pandemic?
Oh, definitely not for 5 years. I only moved down to SoCal maybe 3 years ago now.
Okay.
So it's fairly new to me. I'm mostly doing commercials now. I'm doing short films here and there, but I enjoy it a lot. I'm getting a lot of on-set experience and it's a lot of fun. I love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, in 3 years you're getting commercials and you're getting short films.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I want to take the next steps and dive into film a little bit more, but I think that industry is a little bit harder to break into. But I think my goals in life is to be like a comedic sidekick in a featured film. Like whenever Awkwafina's in a movie, for example, she plays that comedic sidekick and everything she's in, you're like, this is going to be so funny because she's in there. So I love being like the second person, the second funny person.
Right. Relieves the pressure of being the funny person.
A little bit, yeah.
I could see that. I could see your Awkwafina vibes and not entirely, but I could see what you mean by the second person.
Yeah, yeah. She's so funny. I love her.
Yeah. Let's put it here. Hopefully we see you on the big screen soon.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's a long journey, but...
Yeah, but it's a journey worth taking. And I think it's a journey that requires 1,000 more steps that every step feels good. It feels like you're moving towards something.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it does feel good.
They're not empty steps.
No.
Yeah. Tree, thank you so much for coming on
today. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to bring up that I didn't bring up?
No, I think we covered everything. We covered poop. We covered being gay. We covered trauma. That makes up me.
Yeah. Well, I hope to have you on again soon. And when I mean soon, it's like every time you have something new, hit me up and, you know, sit and we all have conversation.
Yeah, I'd love to be back. It was such a nice day out.
Yeah. Thank you, Tree.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.